How did Christian communities in the past respond to godless cultures? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Embracing Godly Character, The Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Embracing Godly Character at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Embracing Godly Character, 1-800-325-3040.
We are about to present the final award of the night. This is the home stretch. Nothing could possibly go wrong from here on. What happened last year is Waterhouse under the bridge. Here now, on the historic 51st anniversary of the classic Bonnie and Clyde, please welcome Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
And the Oscar goes to... The Shape of Water.
Those are some sounds from the Oscars recently held in Hollywood. Jimmy Kimmel hosting, Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty giving the big prize at the end, Best Picture, going to the movie The Shape of Water, a strange love story, not the only strange love story being recounted in film and getting an award at the 2018 Academy Awards. How do they juggle all the social justice issues all at once and navigate their own Me Too controversies during a 3-hour or 4-hour ceremony and award ceremony? Joining us to talk about the 2018 Academy Awards, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
We talked recently about the Golden Globes. The political narrative of the Golden Globes was quite obviously the Me Too movement. What was the political narrative for the Oscars?
That was certainly part of it for the Oscars as well, but I think the Oscars were the, you know, Academy of Motion Pictures and Sciences were a little more careful about all of it this year. They wanted to include that, and that was part of the narrative, but they also wanted to contain it. So they had a special segment kind of set aside during it where they had three actresses come out and like talk about the movement, what was going on with all of that. And they did it, they were three actresses that had actually been involved with Harvey Weinstein along the way, who had harassed them. So that was Ashley Judd, Annabella Sciorri, and Selma Hayek. They were the three that came out. So they had it kind of contained. They had like a special spot for that. They knew that people would make comments along the way about it, but that wasn't the overarching narrative of the whole thing. They wanted to cover a bunch of different things. So they also wanted to continue to address the Oscars so white, you know, movement that kind of developed in 2015 or so. They wanted to kind of address that. So that was a big part of the whole telecast as well. Plus, again, there's the LGBTQ related stuff that's very obviously out there and with planned bits and pieces all the way through to acknowledge that end of things. And then kind of connected, sort of dovetailed in with the Oscars So White related stuff. They were also dealing with DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals for illegal immigration to the United States. So the Dreamers particularly, that came up as well. So there was a whole bunch of different narratives that they were very carefully managing for this particular Oscars. And I think that there's a reason why overall the whole thing, especially when it came to the political end of things, seemed very cautious, very careful. And that's because this last year was a really bad year at the box office for money, and they had all of these additional scandals going on, and they also needed to kind of convince their general audience of why they should have a voice, I guess, in the culture of the United States and the world. That seemed to be part of it. There was a kind of a cautiousness to the whole thing, and it kind of weaved through the whole production.
So a couple of the questions of a general nature here before we get into winners and losers, so to speak. The Oscars is the time when we get to see what the true Hollywood insiders think is worth watching, isn't it?
It is. Like when we were talking about the Golden Globes, that is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. It's a smaller group of people, 80-some journalists that sit down and make decisions about who's going to win what. But the Oscars, that's the Academy of Motion Pictures and Sciences, and that has got it's a still small group, overall, but it's a much broader group of people, and they're all industry insiders, like you're saying. They vote on things, and they let you know what they like. So that's the actors and actresses and the directors, right down to cinematographers and musicians and all sorts of people who are involved in the movie-making process. So you get a good picture of that. And the interesting thing I thought was how very spread out all the awards were. There really wasn't one movie that made, won 13 awards. So the one that won the most awards was the one that won the Best Picture, The Shape of Water. They won 4. Dunkirk won 3. And then you're down to 2 for Darkest Hour, 2 for 3 Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, 2 for Blade Runner 2049. And then other ones just won single awards, and sometimes important ones, but just single awards. So it was all very spread out, and it seemed very calculated in its... the way it turns out in the end. It's a voting system, so I don't know, I don't want to sound conspiratorial or something, about it, but it seemed very well, spread out along the way.
How did Jimmy Kimmel do as host of the Oscars?
Again, this was his second go at it. He had the big debacle at the end of the last one where Faye Dunaway and the actor who's escaping my mind right now, but... They came out and mis-said what the name of the movie was that had won the Best Picture. So it was La La Land and then this movie, Moonlight. And Moonlight had actually won and La La Land had not won. So they made the mistake there and messed it all up. So he addressed that repeatedly through the performance, his performance as the host. And, it's a very delicate thing in all, just in general, I kind of think of it more walking through a landmine field, if you're trying to do comedy, every step you could be stepping on some sort of political or gender politics or social justice warrior thing that could explode on you. So it seemed very cautious. It seemed, he was doing his shtick. He had maybe one or two jokes that were really funny. There was one where he was talking about the whole elitism. And he says, oh, you know what though? All of these crystals, they had all these crystals in the front of the stage. He says, each one of them represents humility. So that was the one really kind of funny joke. There was another joke that kind of stood out to me in the monologue that I thought was just really kind of strange. And, it was trying to address the whole harassment related stuff. And he said, he went over to the Oscar statue and he said, Oscar is the most beloved and respected man in Hollywood. And there's a very good reason why. Just look at him. Keeps his hands where you can see them, never says a rude word, and most importantly, no penis at all. He is literally a statue of limitations, and that's the kind of men we need more of in this town. It's the strangest joke. The more I thought about it afterwards, the more strange it got, particularly because, in that town of Hollywood, transgenderism is praised, and in that case, men are literally removing their male anatomy, and that's kind of like the new sacred golden calf, and using it as part of a punchline of a joke about sexual harassment is kind of odd. Also, there's all of the women everything connected to all of that too. And I think it just misses the mark when it comes to like how most women in society actually want their men. And then also like seems to fall off the, you know, fall into the ditch on the other side for people who are kind of enamored with this LGBTQ related idea of gender. It's a very strange joke.
Kimmel has kind of cast himself a little bit as the moral voice of late night. Was there some of that in evidence?
You know, there is. I mean, they're just along the way he comes across, you know, in that way. It's kind of mild, kind of sanctimoniousness. And that in and of itself is a little odd because years and years ago in the 90s, one of the first things he started to get popular for was being on something called The Man Show, which was not exactly very sensitive when it came to the relationships between men and women and sexuality. So it's very odd that he would be a guy lecturing people on their, you know, or being part of a show that's lecturing people on, you know, how the relationships between the sexes should go.
We're talking about the 2018 Academy Awards with Pastor Ted Geese. When we come back, we'll talk about the film Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Sam Rockwell, who won Best Supporting Actor. What is that film about? When we conclude our conversation on the Oscars with Pastor Ted Geese, we'll turn to part one of a two-part conversation on American evangelicalism and Eastern Orthodoxy with Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn. We'll talk sin, free will, and redemption. Stay tuned.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday afternoon, we're talking about the 2018 Academy Awards. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Let's turn, if we could, here, Ted, to the Best Supporting Actor Award that went to one of my favorite actors, Sam Rockwell, for his performance in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. What was this movie about?
Yeah, it's an issues movie. So essentially, it's about a small town and a small town sheriff's department and a family where the daughter in the family is raped and murdered and killed, and the body is burnt, and then there's really no movement on the case. So the mother of the dead girl, played by Frances McDormand, basically pays for these billboards outside of town calling out the sheriff's department for not doing their work. Sam Rockwell is a real screw up of a character, and he works at the police department as a deputy, and he does just a really, really wonderful job. Frances McDormand also won Best Actress for this particular role that she had as the mother. And the movie itself is a really interesting movie, and it's sort of one that also has like darkly comedic elements to it, kind of almost in the vein of the Coen brothers kind of a thing.
Best Supporting Actress went to Allison Janney in a film that I think just came out, if I'm not mistaken, in advance of the Oscars, I, Tonya, about Tonya Harding. Talk about that one.
Yeah, it was in limited release earlier. I have not seen it yet. But it's about Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding and everything that kind of went on with the Winter Olympics. I think that was the Winter Olympics back in Calgary and in Canada, actually, where, you know, Tonya Harding and company actually took a pipe to, or in some ways damaged the knee of Nancy Kerrigan. With the Olympics, Winter Olympics just having finished, it should be kind of a movie people might be interested in. Also, Allison Janney did just a fantastic job, apparently, in that movie. I have not seen it. She was up against stiff competition, though. Laurie Metcalf was in Lady Bird, and she did a fantastic job. That is a movie that I did see, and she did a very good job. So those were the two actresses that were kind of the ones front of the pack, and Allison Janney won.
You had mentioned, I believe, Blade Runner before. It got Best Visual Effects, which is actually kind of a huge category in 2018, considering it was up against Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Wars and a couple others. Talk about that.
Yeah, those are all movies. That whole category were movies that we ended up reviewing, all of them. War of the Planet of the Apes was also in there, and Kong Skull Island, of all things. So it did a very good job, and it had a hard job. Blade Runner 2049 had to seamlessly fit in with the previous iconic film, Blade Runner. And really, the visuals were a big part of that. It also won for cinematography as well. So, and that's pretty good for Blade Runner 2049. Denis Villeneuve is the director of that film, and he's a French-Canadian director.
So talk about the film Call Me By Your Name, which was... The subject matter is extremely awkward in a Me Too time in Hollywood, but it did win adapted screenplay. What's the film about?
Yeah, the film is about a 17-year-old boy and a 25-year-old man who end up in a, I'm going to use gigantic air quotes here, romantic relationship, and also like a sexual relationship. So this is a very peculiar movie to wind up nominated for awards, particularly this year. It's a very peculiar movie in that you have like Kevin Spacey, who is literally bounced out of Hollywood, tossed out of Hollywood because he'd had attempted to have a relationship like this between an older man and a teenage boy in his own personal life, and that wound him up outside of Hollywood. He's been excised out. So now here you have a movie where you've got an adult and a 17-year-old boy in a gay sexual relationship. It baffles the mind that this somehow manages to get the accolades that it gets. It has a good, like the fellow who won, James Ivory, he's from Merchant and Ivory Productions. So that's like Remains the Day and like lots of like big historical dramas. So he has like, it has a good pedigree with some of the people involved in it, but it seems so incredibly tone deaf for what's going on right now, like in terms of what they're dealing with in Hollywood.
Kevin Spacey, likely had this not come out, would have been hosting the Oscars this year, given his success and his talent. But does Hollywood seem to understand the disconnect that's in evidence when this kind of film, it's also nominated for Best Picture, and it was released pretty much almost the same day that the Kevin Spacey story was breaking too. Do they appear to see the disconnect?
I don't know. I apparently not. I think that what it boils down to, and like, there's two things. One thing is that like we were talking about, the Academy Awards, like the Oscars, are a meritocracy. So it is actually Hollywood insiders voting on this. So this is not some sort of oligarchy of guys pushing an idea. It is a smaller group when you think of the 330 some odd million Americans that exist. But this is their industry and they're voting on these things. So it shows that they don't think that this is a problem. And I think that they don't think that it's a problem, this storyline, this idea. It's not a cautionary tale. It's like this quote-unquote bittersweet romantic coming of age first love story. This is like the way that it would probably be spun. I think that they don't see the disconnect because for them it's not about statutory rape, it's about consent. So as long as both parties in the story are consenting, then it's okay. And if Kevin Spacey in his escapades, if he had always had consent along the way, well, maybe that would be okay too, ? So I don't know, like if that's the disconnect, is that it's right by what feels right, but they're just not caring what's right by the law. So it's a very strange thing. And I think it's just the most bizarre part of the whole Oscars, actually.
Speaking of strange love stories, The Shape of Water, what is that film about? And it did get Best Director.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro is a very good director. Like he's done movies like Pan's Labyrinth, like there's Hellboy, Hellboy 2, Pacific Rim, which was a big movie, Blade 2. So he's been making movies since the early 90s, and he is a very good filmmaker. He probably does deserve a Best Director nomination and win, but maybe not for this movie particularly, although it is a really well-made movie. So The Shape of Water is maybe one of these movies that people won't have thought too much about, but now because it's won Best Picture, people might be thinking, well, maybe I should give this a shot. So what you get is, it's kind of like Creature from the Black Lagoon, like that 1954 movie, but if that Creature from the Black Lagoon fell in love, if they captured the monster and he fell in love. So it's also quite a bit like, there's a comedic movie from the 80s called Splash with Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah about a mermaid. It's similar sort of to that movie too, in that you have like a government installation that's doing research and then people trying to save the creature to get it out of there, and then the love story ensues. So Sally Hawkins plays this mute Elsa Esposito, and she's a janitor working at this hidden high security government military laboratory. It's set in 1962 Baltimore, and so the Cold War is going on. All of that's part of it. These scientific studies are being conducted on this military asset, this amphibian sort of man kind of a creature, and she falls in love with him because she's kind of an outsider. She sees it as an outsider, and she has a friend, Octavia Spencer, playing this character Zelda Fuller. She's an African-American lady. They work together as janitors at this installation. And she also has a next-door neighbor who's a gay graphic designer, and he's struggling with his work, and that's Richard Jenkins is playing that part. So as the film goes, you know, she discovers this monster, they fall in love, she helps the monster escape, they consummate their relationship. The film is rated R, mostly because of nudity and sexuality. There are a couple other distressing moments in it. One where the person pulls some fingers off of their hand. So it's got some horror film kind of stuff, but that's more like just the general wrapper for the film. And then underneath are the other underlying themes of outsiders and things like that. I guess a distressing thing in it is that when you sit back and you think about it again, the film is about interspecies sexual relationships and, you know, romantic love, quote unquote. So that's a pretty odd thing. Plus, I guess from a religious point of view, there's another element going on with it too, where the creature has been, like in the course of the film, they talk about it being worshipped as a god by the South American people, Aboriginal people, that it was in that area that they took it away from. And then it shows that it's able to heal people. So there is this moment where it heals the Richard Jenkins character of Giles, the gay graphic designer, but it heals him of his baldness. He's going bald and it gives him his hair back. Of course, like in the course of the movie, it's set in 1962, and really what's going on in the movie for that character is that they don't fit into society, and the deepest pain that he has, the most suffering that he has as a character, this side character, is that he's gay living in a world that is not okay with that. So the monster doesn't heal him of the thing that's causing him the greatest pain in life. He just, in a kind of, I don't know, something kind of more connected to vanity, makes his hair grow back. So that's a kind of another peculiar element of the film. It is an interesting film and well shot and deserving of Hollywood's attention.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're talking about the 2018 Academy Awards. When we come back, was there ever any doubt that Gary Oldman would win Best Actor for Darkest Hour?
Scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manouge of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manouge making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
What is a pietist? Do Lutherans fast? When our faith and our feelings go to war, who wins? Can a hymnal enrich your prayer life? What can medieval pilgrims teach Christians today about devotion? Find answers to these questions and more in the March issue of The Lutheran Witness. Subscribe to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's flagship magazine at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Are you a high schooler who enjoys theology? Do you know a high schooler who would make a good pastor or deaconess? Every summer, Concordia Theological Seminary offers programs for vocational discernment and theological education for high school students. Check out Christ Academy and Phoebe Academy this summer, June 17th through the 30th. Registrations open now. Email us at christacademy@ctsfw.edu or register online. Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, June 17th through the 30th.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the 2018 Academy Awards with Pastor Ted Geese. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. When your child, your grandchild, your godchild comes home for spring break, be sure to tell them about LCMSU. It's an initiative that connects and supports Lutheran students to face the challenges to their biblical worldview, doctrine, ethics, and practices. You can learn more at lcms.org/lcmsu, lcms.org/lcmsu. Turning to Best Actor, Ted, was there ever any doubt that Gary Oldman would win that slot for his performance in Darkest Hour?
I don't think so. I mean, he was the front runner for sure in that category, and he did a spectacular job. So Darkest Hour won two awards, one for Gary Oldman for his acting, which was just phenomenal, and then also for the makeup and hairstyling, which was an important part of him being able to pull off being Winston Churchill in a convincing manner. Like, and age makeup and all of that kind of stuff is hard to do, like, and to do convincingly. So the fact that they were able to accomplish this was another big, big win for The Darkest Hour.
And the best actress went, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, to Frances McDormand, who has distinguished herself in a number of films. She's very strongly associated with the Coen brothers in a lot of her films about this. What do you think of a story of a woman who is mourning, publicly mourning the death of her daughter? What does that say? A rapist, by the way, in the Me Too Hollywood.
And I think that this is where, like, this is an issues movie and it fits nicely into what they're currently focusing on. So that kind of helps it kind of come to the forefront. It is a very dark and in points heart-wrenching movie, and it is really well made. And her performance is very good in it. Like, she's this tough as nails character. But it's, and you think, well, that's certainly an act. And it turns out that there are moments where, you know, some kind of deeper, more maternal humanity pops out, even between her and Woody Harrelson, who plays the sheriff in town, where they're set up as antagonistic, but there are these moments of kindness and concern that kind of pop out in the midst of it too. It's one of these movies that doesn't tell you everything at the beginning and starts putting its cards on the table one at a time and builds and builds and builds. And her role in it was really, really, really good. She did a fantastic job. She also mentioned something in her acceptance speech. She talked about something called an inclusion rider. And that's something that would go into legal contracts in Hollywood. And she's, you know, brought this up and made it something that people would be kind of interested to talk about. It's sort of maybe like a, sort of like an affirmative action kind of idea, only broader, that it would include all sorts of people from different sorts of facets and walks of life. The idea being that Hollywood should have a more diverse kind of looking picture of a face of itself in its movies. And if a writer was put into contract saying that they had to have X number of women, X number of men, X number of African-American people or people of color, quote unquote, or other, you know, like LGBTQ people, things like that, that this would be a positive thing in Hollywood. So she brought this thing up in the midst of her acceptance speech. And again, this is part of that political sort of landscape of the Oscars this year. And it also kind of goes towards The Shape of Water and why it was probably successful, because it checked off all of these boxes. It had like a prominent gay character. It had a prominent African-American character. It had a woman as the lead. It was about a love story that was non-traditional. So like it checked off all of these boxes, the sort of thing that would also be included in something like this inclusion rider that Frances McDormand was suggesting.
Finally, with about 30 seconds here, Ted, does it surprise you that this year's Oscars were the lowest rated in history?
No, because I almost didn't know that they were on. And of course, you know, I'm paying attention. So there was very little lead up in terms of advertising for it in advance, or at least it wasn't seeping down to me. So that might be part of why it wasn't too much attention on it. Also, it's one of those things. It's like they don't know how it's going to go. And in addition to that, like I said, last year was just a terrible year at the box office for the actual dollars and cents end of things. So there is a little bit of issue with, do people know the movies that are up for these awards? That's always kind of a hard thing for the Oscars. But I think that that's all part of why it was kind of a little more of a low attendance for just watching it.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You'll find a link to his movie reviews under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to begin a conversation with Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn about American Evangelicalism and Eastern Orthodoxy. We'll take up the subjects of sin, free will, and redemption right after this.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Silicon Valley is a place of cutting-edge innovation which radically changes lives, where science fiction is already in research and development. In the heart of this digital chaos is a sanctuary of constancy and reverence, Hope Lutheran in Fremont, where nothing is new under the California sun, where the timeless gospel is proclaimed and the sacrament is celebrated with the historic liturgy that truly changes lives. And thanks to Silicon Valley, you may find us on the web at hopelutheranfremont.org.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California. Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas. Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.